Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by FreshBooks, the easy-to-use cloud accounting software for small business owners. Make 2018 your most productive year yet. Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/AAA. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life, and that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/android. And by ZipRecruiter. Looking for your next great hire? Well, ZipRecruiter offers simple tools and powerful matching technology to find you qualified candidates efficiently and effectively. It's the smartest way to hire. Try it for free at ziprecruiter.com/android. And welcome to All About Android, episode number 351, recorded on Tuesday, January 9th, 2018. We're your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
How's it going, Ron Richards?
It's going well. I'm staying warm. We're surviving here on the East Coast.
Yeah, no
kidding. We're doing what we can.
You've been impacted by large amounts of icicle sorts of things. Right?
It was the snow was fine. It was the freezing temperatures. Today was actually the first day I woken up not thinking it was totally freezing in my apartment, which is great. So
oh, okay.
We're on our way out of the deep freeze.
That's an upgrade. As you can tell, Florence Ion is not with us this evening. She'll be back next week. She's walking the floors of CES. Probably not at this point because it's the evening time. If she's still walking the floors of CES, I'm sorry, Flo, that you're still doing that. Maybe she is. I don't know.
I got to say, I woke up on Monday and I was like, thank God I'm not in Vegas. Oh, man.
Although this show is filled with CES stuff, I'm almost kind of wishing that I was there because of all the cool stuff. But before we get to all that, we want to introduce a newcomer to the show, a new friend of the show. It's Luke Klinker, a developer. I'm sure you've heard of many of Luke's apps with ClinkerApps.com, all sorts of apps. Pulse SMS, Talon for Twitter has been, I think, featured in the arena in the past. Evolve SMS, Source, I think, also featured in the arena. Luke, we've had you on the show many times, but never in person.
Yeah, hey, I'm really happy to be here. I was struggling to find something for the arena tonight because, yeah, you guys have taken all my apps already.
Exactly, exactly.
It's like a scramble as to who gets to cover it. I mean, I think it's been years that, like I was saying before during the pre-show of the show, I've been a Talon user, I think, since day one.
Mm-hmm.
At least as far as I know, day one of me finding it. It could have been day 100, I don't know. But but normally we get on the boat pretty early. But yeah, no, Luke, we are big fans of your apps. Like I said, it's like having a celebrity on the show.
That's right.
So. Oh, well, thank you. I'm honored.
Officially a friend of the show. Every time we mention your name in the future, that will be attached to it. I hope you don't mind.
Hey,
it's kind of what we do here. But yeah, thank you for taking time out to talk. Well, we're going to talk with you here in a few minutes, just kind of about your experience developing for the platform. So we'll dive into that. Of course, we've got a bunch of news as well. This is the week of the Consumer Electronics Show. And, you know, sometimes I feel like CES comes along and it's kind of like little bits and drabs here and there. This week, there's a lot of Android-related news. We've got a bunch of Google announcements, Razer's Project Linda concept, Planet Computer's Gemini, which is very interesting. Can't wait to talk about that one. Sony Xperia XA2, and just a whole lot more from CES. And, of course, we have the arena, a few emails. It's a jam-packed episode. And just as a reminder, by the way, if you're jonesing for an Oreo cookie, remember it's at the end of the episode now. It's not here. So make sure and tune in after the credits.
I will do a tease. If you stay tuned for after the credits, you can see an Oreo that gets a perfect score.
Oh, that's a good tease.
It's a spoiler, but find out why by staying tuned to the end of the show.
The Oreo flavor may surprise you. First of all, before we get into the news, you know, since we do have a developer celebrity on the show with us, we're totally talking you up here, Luke. It's only because we love your apps. So we thought we'd spend a few minutes kind of chatting with you a bit about your experience, your history. You've obviously produced a number of, obviously there's tons of Android apps in the Play Store, but there are certain developers that when they release a new app are guaranteed to get attention, guaranteed to get those valuable eyeballs because their stable of apps is that good. You know, you've always had a really great attention to detail when it comes to the design of the apps in particular. You guys spend, I have to imagine, a good amount of time and a good amount of attention on how you design your apps. Talk a little bit about your earliest break in developing, when you got started. I know that you are a brother team, right? Two brothers. How does that work out? How does that play out?
So first off, I want to say my brother Jake, he's working out at Google now. He's not working for Clinker Apps anymore.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So he's been out there for about a year and a half.
Okay.
He's probably watching here, but yeah.
Wow. Do you feel like he kind of sold out?
Well, I won't answer that.
I don't know. I feel like when the mothership hovers over the top of you, like you kind of have no choice. You're like, okay, take me.
Yep. As we've seen that with Liam, with like so many others, have kind of Google grabs them. So at least Luke, I'm glad we got you while we have you. So.
Yeah, exactly. While we can.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did it all start? Kind of developing and starting all of this with your brother. What was that relationship like from a productive standpoint?
Yeah. So we started making apps around 2012, I think. So 5 years ago, we were freshmen in college at the University of Iowa, and we made this little app called Sliding Messaging, and it was kind of just me and Jacob. And we had kind of a unique idea. I mean, it was a text messaging app, but you could swipe between your different conversations. So just one really standout unique feature. But we released it at kind of a great time in Android where people didn't care that much about design. And here we come in, you know, we've got this app that's not only functional, but it is it looks good too, and it's custom. And we got a lot of attention right off the bat from that. I think we started out just posting it on XDA. Back in those days, and then moved on to the Play Store, and we actually some little tiny YouTube channel named MKBHD actually featured sliding messaging in one of his "What's on My Phone" messages back in 2013 or videos back in 2013, and that's kind of where it started to kick off, and where we got some good publicity. And sliding messaging did great. It was a lot of learning. We'd never done anything like that before. I mean, we were fresh out of high school, and we'd only had, you know, one programming class in high school. So we pretty much taught ourselves everything we needed to know to make that app. And it was really the base of what we have today with Talon and Pulse and Evolve and Source as well. So yeah, that's kind of where we got started.
Listening to you kind of talk about, you know, right there at the end, what you were saying as far as like it just, you know, fresh out of high school, and you just decided to put this app together, focus on design. I mean, there are a lot of people who have never designed or developed an app before that get into it and think, wow, let's see where I can take this. And it doesn't go very far, or it's not as polished, or whatever the case may be. Why did that work so well for you? How were you able to focus so much on design? Because like you say, there wasn't a whole lot of great design happening back in 2012. I wouldn't say that it wasn't important to people. We just weren't seeing very much of it. And thankfully now is a very different story. We see a lot of great design. But how were you able to tackle that where others weren't able to be so effective in it?
You know, I don't know. I think we were really fortunate to get our stuff picked up on, first of all, obviously. A lot of people don't get that. But when we started doing this, Google was just starting to put out these hollow design guidelines. And this was kind of the first of its kind for Android. I mean, no one had ever done this before. No one had ever really thought about design, like we were just saying. So we did have a little bit of guidance from Google and the new tools they were putting out and stuff. But really, we just wanted to dive in and see what we could make. We didn't have design experience. We didn't have programming experience, again, like I said. It just kind of all came together, and adding the customization aspects to it, again, which was something that not that many people were doing, that was a really big plus for us in terms of the design and just what our users were liking out of it. So
I'm really curious in terms of as you started doing your developing and, you know, kind of, you know, the kind of order of apps you put out. And it seems as if you kind of have a, at least from, you know, by the apps that I've used of yours, as well as the ones that are promoted on your site at clinkerapps.com. It seems as if you have a bit of a lean towards messaging, you know, with Pulse and Evolve and then Talon, you know, and Source with a little bit in terms of content. How do you, when you sit down, are you developing for yourself first and saying, these are the apps I want to see? Or, you know, what is, when you decide you want to tackle something, what is that decision like?
Yeah, I'm only ever going to make an app that I'm going to use every day. I mean, the stuff I make, it's stuff that I'm passionate about. It's stuff that I want to do. And I think that's really important when you're trying to decide on an app, because obviously, I mean, these things, you sink a lot of time into them. And if you don't like what you're making, if you don't use what you're making, then you're not going to want to spend that time. You're not going to want to put the time into it. So yeah, when it started out with Talon and Evolve and sliding messaging, it was kind of like, we saw these stock apps that, you know, come with your phone. They were good. They were decent. But we thought, hey, we can do this better. We know we can make this better. We can make it more customizable. And we want those so that we can use them. Yeah. So I think that should be a major driver for anything you make.
Absolutely.
So when you're using other apps, do you get the decisions other people make and you go, I would have done that differently?
yes. Yes, there are plenty of apps, and I gotta make a plug for myself here. I do a lot of consulting as well as my own apps here, and there's many apps that I would download and say, man, I gotta reach out to them and tell them they need to hire me and fix this stuff. But, so yes, I do see that, and that's been, I mean, improving on something that comes with your phone. That's kind of what we've built Clinker apps on. So.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. you can have a great, you know, a developer can have a great idea for an app, but not think about all the usability aspects of it necessarily. Seeing it through that other lens, like imagine as from a consulting perspective, to a certain degree, you're consulting on taste, right? Like you're consulting on your ability as a developer to look at an app and go, this is what would be useful to me as a user, and to other users, I'm sure, you know, they would be looking for the same thing. Not all developers think in those terms, I would imagine. I'm not a developer. I don't, you know.
No, so, you're definitely right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can understand why that would be very, very helpful.
Yeah. Yep. It takes a unique person to, you know, to not only make this stuff, but to market it and to provide the support behind it and to make the designs and just the whole package. And I'm very fortunate that I've been able to learn about all that stuff. And it's making my own stuff has given me a lot of insight into how all that works. And I've never been great at all of the pieces of it. But slowly, as we've continued, I've learned, and I think it's been pretty successful over the years. So
yeah, absolutely. What I mean, so over the years, you've been doing this since 2012. Android has changed a lot in five, almost 6 years, and for the better. I would say the Android now is night and day compared to what it was 5 or 6 years ago. So the limitations you had to work in then versus the expansive capabilities that you have by comparison now. What would you say is the biggest challenge that you've faced in over your time developing, like the biggest hurdle that you've had to overcome, either technically or just in general, you know, maybe it's dealing with, you know, dealing with the demands of millions of people in the Play Store. That could be a big challenge. What's one of the most kind of complicated parts of that over the years?
The hardest part for me as we've continued to grow is definitely the support aspect of the apps. I mean, I've always had kind of a philosophy, whether it's always worked out for me or not. I mean, I've had the philosophy that if someone sends me an email, if someone spends their time reaching out, I want to spend my time and get back to them. So I do spend a lot of time every day, a lot of time every week trying to you know, respond to users' requests. And if someone sends me an email, they're probably going to hear a response. And mm-hmm. I think it's really easy to get overwhelmed by that as well. So that balancing time you spend on that versus time you actually spend making the apps, it's difficult. I mean, I'm getting some days 200 emails, or more even, and wow. just balancing that time and learning how to balance that time as we've continued to grow. It's been a challenge and I'm still not great at it. I'm still not great at support, but definitely working on it and constantly improving. And I think it's a good goal to be able to respond to everyone.
Yeah. Well, that's the challenge of being a small business, you know, like, and that's the challenge of technically being a startup. I mean, and being, you know, kind of entrepreneur in that regard. So you'll get there. I would love to look to you to give us a little glimpse under the hood about the tools you use and about the stuff that you actually use for development. Because I think that, you know, just, you know, it, give a little insight, you know, or, you know, are you utilizing a lot of the recent, you know, kind of, you know, studio apps and things like that, that have come out from Google, or what do you use to create your work?
Were you cheering super loud when you heard the word Kotlin at Google?
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
That was the follow up if it didn't come up, Jason. Yeah, absolutely. That was my, angling into Kotlin.
Luke was standing up. Cheer, fist in the air.
I wish I would have been at Google I/O when that went off. My wife and I, we actually just had a little baby girl during Google I/O, so I wasn't able to be there. But yes, Kotlin. Oh my gosh, I started using that just dabbling a little bit here and there. It wasn't in any of my production apps when it was released. I started integrating it for myself, all of my clients. I started using it across the board. It's been fantastic. It's just been such a breath of fresh air, and it's just better and easier to use, easier to understand, easier to work with. So Kotlin has been the major, major shift in Android development, and it's a fantastic one. But in terms of my other tools that I use, Android Studio, obviously, all the time. All of the apps I make, they're completely native apps, so I don't use any type of cross-platform frameworks for like iOS development or anything like that. So I'm in Android Studio constantly. I have a MacBook Pro that I use for development, one of the 2016 models, and I just stick it on my desk, and I got a nice giant ultra wide screen, which I would recommend anyone if you're a developer or not. I love it. So.
Yeah, I need to upgrade my screen for that. Why is that particularly useful for developers, just out of curiosity?
So one thing you got to know about developers, if you're making an app or doing software in general, someone else has solved the same problem that you're trying to solve. And searching for help online is a huge part of anything you do. You know, you don't want to reinvent the wheel. So having a browser window open alongside Android Studio is helpful.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Yep. That makes a lot of sense.
So, and just real quickly, do you do any visualization before, like do you just write direct to code and design the coded the work, or are you doing any kind of mock-ups or anything before you dive in? Like, what I'm curious what that iteration looks like.
Yeah, so before I used to just kind of dive in, and while it worked really well in Talon and Evolve and all of our stuff before that. But with Pulse, you know, we started kind of, Jacob helped me start making Pulse before he left for Google, and we kind of thought about, you know, designing up front rather than just building it as we go. You know, having a vision for this app in front of time or ahead of time and kind of following through with that vision rather than just creating it as we go. So yeah, I use Sketch, which is probably it's the standard for Mac users, I guess. So we use Sketch to kind of design all of our UI up front, and it's worked out great. I mean, they have awesome tools. It's just a really, really cool tool. So yeah, I think that has been for Pulse, that has been fantastic to have everything just set up and know the vision that we're trying to create before we actually get there. I think that was really, really helpful and a great, great idea for us.
Right on.
Cool.
I know we need to get moving on, but JJ in chat threw out a question, which actually I've wondered about lately for people who are actively developing and very used to material design. Material design, of course, as a spec has been around long enough to get really comfortable with it and for it to kind of evolve into, you know, even further into its own language. Do you feel like it needs, like, are we at a point where material design is starting to feel a little tired? Are you happy with it? How do you feel about that in the design of your apps?
So material design is awesome, but if someone were to ask me about it, it really is, and they call it this right up front. They call it guidelines. They don't say that, you know, this is something that you need to follow to the T. Yeah. And I think that's really important when you're designing your apps, because if you just put out a standard material design app, you know, it might get lost in the crowd. Android obviously has so many apps out there, and so many material design apps are available now. You need to do something on top of material design, whether that's from animations, whether that's from just little UI tricks or something like that. Something on top of material design is fantastic. I think that the material design guidelines are a great base to build off of, but I would say something more. You need something more.
Yeah, it's a good starting point. I think that's kind of, that's what I always wondered from the very beginning, is I love the unifying aspect of it. But if everybody was strict to the guidelines, everything would look the same. Thankfully, there's been a lot of variation. Yeah. Even Google has done that with their own apps.
Yep. There just wouldn't be any innovation if everyone stuck exactly to the guidelines. So. Yeah.
Awesome. So clinkerapps.com for the apps that you produce. And real quick, before we move on, you say you do consulting. How would someone find you in that regard if they wanted that?
Yeah. If you want to reach out to me, you can email me at luke@clinkerapps.com. I got to say, I'm pretty busy right now, but I am always open to discussing new things. So
we won't send that many people to you. No, you might get some emails, but there you go. Hey, you can always plan for the future as well. Plan your time for the future.
Hey, definitely.
Right on. Cool. Well, thank you for that, Luke. It's awesome stuff. We have an email, Ron.
Yes, I believe this is an email from a friend of the show. Yes, if I'm correct, Jason, right? And I don't want to mispronounce his last name. Sam
Abu El Samid.
Abu El Samid. Yeah, that's what I thought. Sorry. Yeah. Anyway, so Sam, thanks for writing in. Always good to hear from you. Sam says, listening to All About Android 350 and Flo's desire to get information about fuel level through Android Auto, I wanted to share some information. When Google launched Android Auto, they wanted to be able to access to some of the vehicle data. However, automakers wanted to keep this to themselves for privacy reasons and the ability to monetize it themselves. Thus, the only vehicle data available to Android Auto is GPS location, since the built-in GPS antennas and receivers are generally more accurate and reliable to the ones built into phones. In the case of information like fuel level, this would only be available while the phone is connected to the car anyway. When you're out of the vehicle, there's no connection to get vehicle data through Android Auto. It would be impossible. It would be possible to capture the last value before the car was shut off, but if multiple people use the car, it would only update the last phone connected unless it's synced to the cloud. However, most automakers now offer such data through their telematic services and proprietary apps. For example, GM owners can use OnStar Remote Link to check things like fuel level or battery charge, in addition to functions like remote start, lock unlock, and remote charging management. These all work through a cellular connection between the car and the cloud. So there you go.
Sam knows his stuff.
He does. He really, really does. And this is probably a good time to mention the newly announced JVC Android Auto head unit, right?
Yeah, so we were talking last week. You know, part of this discussion was this idea that possibly at CES a wireless Android Auto head unit or multiples would be announced. And I realize we haven't actually officially gotten into the here's what was announced at CES segment of the show, but this relates to the email. So yeah, JVC has the JVC KWV940BW, which is a very nice name, as they usually are. But it allows for you to connect your phone to your Android Auto via Wi-Fi. So direct connected via Wi-Fi when you get in, so that you don't have to find the cable, plug it in order for it to get that sync. So that's what wireless is referring to as far as Android Auto is concerned.
And it's important to note that we're going to thank a sponsor in a moment, but when we're back, we're going to go over the CES stuff, and that's not the last bit of Android Auto we're going to talk about.
That's true.
Or at least cars, you know, car stuff. So stay tuned.
That's true. Luke, do you have an Android Auto head unit? Does anyone have an Android Auto head unit?
I
feel like it's one of those things we just hear about. We never actually see very much.
I would need a car first.
So. I don't know. We could install a head unit into a big box with a couple of speakers, put it in your living room. I don't know why, but we could.
I will say when I was working at Anchor over the summer with those guys, they were developing both Android Auto and CarPlay, and they bought a head unit and were developing directly to the head unit, not hooked up to anything. So I guess you got to do that. So,
yeah. Unless you want your developers to have their office be inside of the cab of a car, which, hey, I'm sure crazier things have happened. Let's take a minute before we get into all the CES news and start talking about that stuff. And we're going to thank sponsor, and then we'll get to that. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by FreshBooks. With the New Year's, with New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, and all the resolutions that come as a result of that, if you're planning to start a new business this year as part of your resolution, or maybe you're looking for a fresh start with your business accounting, make sure you're on the right track with FreshBooks Cloud Accounting Software. It really is awesome software. Their intuitive dashboard will give you quick access to your spending, outstanding balances, total profit, and other accounting reports, and make it super easy to get that stuff. It's designed to be easy. You'll know how your business is doing at any given moment, and you'll be ahead of the game during tax season, which is even better. And with FreshBooks, you can send professional looking invoices in seconds. You'll save time accepting credit cards online and get paid an average of 2 times faster. No more chasing clients for payments or waiting in line at the bank. You accept credit card payment directly from your invoice. So it makes it easy for them to pay via the invoice. See what invoices have been sent, viewed, and paid, as well as overdue and outstanding invoice totals. And you can now create proposals with rich text content, images, customizable sections, and more, so you can showcase the value you bring to prospective clients. It'll help you win more jobs. Know what you did and when you did it, so you'll never leave money on the table again. FreshBooks makes it easy to bill for time by client and by specific project. You can assign services to projects, designate different rates for each service. You can put your business on autopilot, from payment reminders to late fees. Automate it all. You can automate as much or as little as you'd like to, so you can get back to doing what you love and not have to manage the bits and details along the way. And with the FreshBooks app, you can stay connected to your clients and keep tabs on your business no matter where you are. Make 2018 your most productive year yet. Try FreshBooks free for 30 days. Just visit freshbooks.com/AAA. You'll want to enter All About Android in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Make sure and put that in there so they know we sent you. That's freshbooks.com/AAA. And we thank FreshBooks for their support of All About Android. I think more or less the rest of this stuff is hardware. So if you happen to have the hardware bumper queued up, we can jump there. I realize I didn't put it in the doc, and I apologize, Victor.
Oh, look at that.
See? Proper.
All right. Good job, right, Victor. Good job. All right. So we were talking about Android Auto. So we're going to kick things off at CES inside the car. And if you had on your CES Android-related news bingo card, Google Assistant and Android Auto, you would win. Google is got a pretty big presence at CES, actually, with a bunch of announcements. The first one was that we're going over is Google Assistant will arrive on Android Auto later this year. Up till now, the watchword OKG or Hey G with Android Auto was using Google Voice Search, not the Assistant. So this change means things like home control from the car, setting a default music service for voice playback, et cetera. All the great services that you're used to with Google Assistant extended to your Android Auto instance. So you could be driving home and you could say, okay, G, set the temperature at home to 80 degrees because you live like that hot. But or
that's a hot house.
It's been really cold in New York. It's just extending the reach of Google Assistant to the car, which I think is pretty cool and not a big surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be neat to be able to kind of geofence that. So as you get closer, you don't even have to do that. Your head unit is doing it for you. Although we also have our phones in the car. So we're back in this familiar place where it's like, okay, cool, it does that, but this always did it and it's always there too. So
it's becoming the thing where Google has any sort of Android-based product, it's going to be weird if it doesn't have Assistant. Luke, how do you feel about Google Assistant? Is it something that you use? Do you not really pay much attention? What's your take on it?
Well, I got a couple of Google Homes. I got two free minis when I got Pixels from my wife and I, and I got a normal one. I'm thinking about getting a Max. I like them for just speakers. I honestly don't use the Assistant that much other than to start playing the music or that sort of thing. So I don't use it a whole lot, but I think it's a cool product for the people that do use it. And I know there are people out there that use it all the time. So, and if they want it in everything, they should definitely get it in everything. So,
yeah, I think the Google Homes, especially, like, they are what you want them to be for the most part. Like, some people use Assistant to the utmost, you know, degree. I would think that I would, yet I'm just like you, Luke. We have Google Homes now, either the minis or the regular, and I've been testing the Max, which I'll review next week on this show. Every room of our house has one now. And the main reason is because we play, like, ever since getting Google Home, we all four of us, including my 4-year-old, my 7-year-old, we all play music all the time. So my kids are listening to whatever music they want to in their room. I'm listening to something while I'm doing dishes downstairs. Like, if that's all it is to me, it's still totally worth it because it's really easy to use. It's how I want my music system to work. Maybe it doesn't sound amazing in all rooms, but it sounds fine. My kids don't care they have a Google Home Mini and that it doesn't sound good compared to the Max, which, by the way, sounds really good. It's crazy good. But it is what you want it to be, right? And it's the total Trojan horse kind of thing where Google gets it in your home, Luke, because you wanted it as a music thing. But maybe somewhere down the line, you end up getting a device that speaks the same language, smart home, whatever. You already have the conduit to kind of allow those to talk, and Google wins.
Yep. I've actually got some lights already. They're sitting right up here above me. Uh-huh. But they're just the Philips Hue lights. And we use it. We use it to turn them on and off. So, but yeah, it's just the lights and the music. And I don't really ask it questions or anything like that. I think it's kind of weird to talk to your... I think it's weird to talk to the Google Assistant, but
yeah. Well, you know, it's pretty spot on when I ask it, you know, what the weather's going to be like. I'm happy when it has an answer for me there. And and then just using it as a Bluetooth speaker. Like, if I'm listening to Audible, I just connect to it via Bluetooth and send my audiobook there. So it is what you want it to be, what you make it to be. Maybe what you need, Luke, and what we all need is an Amazon Echo Show competitor, which we knew was probably going to happen at some point. I never in a million years thought that Google was going to, you know, make all of these third-party hardware announcements at CES, but that's where we're at. Smart displays, as they call them, by Lenovo, Sony, JBL, and LG. All of those companies worked closely with Google on this new category, which many would say, when you look at it, it looks like a tablet with a big speaker on the side. It's a touchscreen device. They're saying it's not a tablet. Doesn't have a web browser. It has no 4G LTE connectivity. The form factor is designed to be more like a, you know, to be set up in your kitchen. So you can display recipes is always the example that you hear, or maybe video chat with someone easily through the device. It basically is the Amazon Echo Show, but with Assistant. And instead of Google making the hardware specifically, there are four hardware partners, and that's what we got. Any excitement around this? Does this change things?
I think that's actually pretty cool. I was just a few years back, actually, I had an old Nexus 9, and I was kind of trying to build something like this myself. I mean, obviously, it didn't have Assistant at that point. It wasn't. It was just a service I was trying to build. So, but I think those are cool. I think that could be useful. Mm-hmm. It just depends. I'd have to use it. I'd have to see it to see what it does.
Yeah,
but it could be.
I'm just impressed that Google, as opposed to taking the risk on one of these products, they're letting other companies take the risk like they did with Android years ago with phones.
Yeah, it's an interesting approach. Like, I almost would have seen this type of hardware announcement and Google coming out with its own thing. But I mean, and this is not the only example of what you're talking about, Ron. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But in this regard, Google is really just kind of saying, here's a new category instead of us doing it. Here's the third party, you know, hardware manufacturers that we're going to work alongside. And like you say, they've got a history of doing that. So that's probably part of the reason why they're at CES and not just holding their own event. So,
yes.
All right, so moving on, and I'm going to apologize, everyone, for my connection troubles. Let's power through this. So another announcement for CES. I could have sworn, Jason, we've covered this announcement before in the past. But so apparently first there was Google Wallet, and then we had Android Pay, and now there's Google Pay.
Oh, here we are again.
Apparently Google has decided to roll in all of their payment services into a new branding. I feel like this is a rerun. So now payment information will be available from one Google account to all types of Google products. And right out of the gate, Airbnb, Dice, Fandango, Hungry House, and Instacart now support it, with more support coming over in upcoming weeks. So Google continues to mishandle their payment. I don't understand why this is a thing. Like, why can't they just pick one and stick with it?
I mean, admittedly, Google Pay is a better name from a branding standpoint than Google Wallet or Android Pay was. Android Pay felt like it was isolating itself to just Android. They went through the same thing with the Play Store before it was the Play Store, when it was Android Marketplace, and then like, well, we want this to be more than just Android, and so they opened it up. It just boils down to Google is not very good at learning these lessons and applying them to other departments. But I think Google Pay is a fine name. I mean, as far as that's concerned, it's about as open, generic as it could possibly be. I just never used the technology. Luke, I'm very curious to know if you are all in on this like wireless payment arm of Android.
I am not. I used Android Pay a few times, but I don't even think I have my card set up on there anymore. I got a new credit card and I didn't even set it up.
Right.
But I do think that Google Pay is better than Android Pay. But you know, now they've got all these Android Pay stickers and marketing out there. What are they going to do with all that? I don't know.
They'll just further confuse people.
Yep.
I gotta admit, I've got a down pat at Walgreens and CVS now. I tap the phone for it to read my loyalty card, and then I tap it again to pay, and it works. It's just not a problem.
Okay. So,
Walgreens was the single place that I used it.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they had it implemented right. I've had times where it doesn't work. We've talked about this on the show plenty of times before, but I've had enough of those times where I just get gun shy, and now I don't even, like, it doesn't even occur to me. The only time it ever occurs to me is that one random time when I leave the house without my wallet. I'm like, oh, well, what is my option? And I have had it work in a pinch in that regard. And I guess that's part of the promise, I suppose, but still. And then kind of what we're talking about with the Echo Show and, you know, Google not being the one to always release its new hardware efforts. But we knew this was coming. We finally have information about Google's long-awaited standalone VR system that they're making with Lenovo. You may remember way back when it was Lenovo and HTC. HTC pulled out of that arrangement and decided to release its own Inside Out system similar to this. Lenovo now has the Mirage Solo, which is a standalone VR headset with a Daydream-style controller. What's different here is that it's standalone, so it doesn't require a smartphone to drop in there. It's literally a charge it up and put it on and go. But it also integrates WorldSense, which is tracking. It's inside-out tracking. They call it PC quality inside-out tracking. But so this is like a step up from Daydream and probably a few significant steps down from any of the marquee players in VR, like the Oculus Rift or the HTC Vive. But they say it has wide field of view and that it's the best way to access Daydream. Should get released in the second quarter of 2018. So I'm interested. I don't know how excited I am because, like, I just never used Daydream. And I was excited about VR from the get-go. And I've seen my excitement wane, I suppose. You have a Pixel, I know, Luke. Do you? And so that probably means that you have a Daydream View. Do you ever use it?
I do. I used it a few times to start with, and I thought it was really cool. I mean, I'd never done anything like that, I guess. Yeah. But then I broke the controller, and I never got a new controller, so I've never used it again, and I haven't really missed it. So
it hasn't been a hole in your life.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Well, and Ron, you have the Pixel now. Do you have a Daydream View?
I do have the Pixel. I do not have a Daydream View or the controller or anything. I've never used it. Maybe I should. I don't know. I'm fine without it. I'm not sitting at home with a lack of things to do, but I'm curious. Totally. I'm Daydream curious. Let's say that.
All right. Well, I would be very curious to check this out. I don't know if we actually saw a price on this either. Now that I'm looking at my notes on it, I don't think that we noted a price for this, but anyways, I'm sure it'll be a couple of $100. And I do also know that they announced the Lenovo Mirage camera, which is a VR 180 spec 3D camera with 4K resolution, and with more cameras on the horizon. But you can see there, it's really only meant to shoot forward. So it's 180 degrees. You point it at, you know, towards the scene that you want. So it's not a full surround immersive sort of thing. It's just point it at the subject, record, and you got full 3D from that fixed point. With a camera like that. So that's kind of nifty. All right.
I will say I like the look of this hardware. I think it looks, the industrial design is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see.
We'll see indeed. All right. So finally, this isn't CES related, but it's still Google related, considering this is a very Google heavy show. And unfortunately, due to my connection issues, I can't show our video viewers. But my Google Pixel Buds arrived in the mail yesterday.
Nice.
Those of you who follow me on Twitter, so I took a picture of them as soon as I got them. I had promised to walk the walk with going wireless and with a Bluetooth headset, considering I'm in support of the killing of the headphone jack. So today was day one with them in the wild, and so far so good. I thought I was going to hate the cable that keeps them connected, but it actually tucks into my jacket collar pretty well, and I don't look that like that much of a dork. And I will say that the use of the string as a way to keep it in your ear is actually kind of clever. So I was impressed by that. The Google Assistant integration is really cool. So day one, so far so good. First impressions, thumbs up. Let's have it, Jason. Let's say next week I'll do a little more in-depth kind of review of them.
I can show
them off a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. How comfortable are they?
They're just as comfortable as the earbuds I've been using. So no more uncomfortable or less uncomfortable. They didn't fall out of my ear at all. Full disclosure, I use them on my commute into work and my commute back home, both about 20 minutes or so on the subway, and they stayed in my ears the whole time. They never fell out. So that's a positive.
All right.
I listened to podcasts. I listened to some music. Music sounded great. I had the assistant read to me a text message, so that worked pretty cool. I didn't try responding to it, but so far so good. So nice. So we'll see if it's worth the money. I did get the powder blue ones because I am style conscious.
Yes, so. they match your your old Nexbit Robin. May it rest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I was going for. But the little case, the charging case that they come with is great. The design is really clever. Like all in all, so far this has been positive. And when I tweeted it out, Google responded to me, so that was kind of cool.
Yeah,
so
they did. Yeah. Now, Luke, you are on the Pixel Bud train. You're actually wearing them tonight. What are your thoughts?
I'm on right now.
What are your thoughts?
So I like them. I mean, I think they're good. They connect really easy to my phone. I, like Ron said, the case is nice. I like that. I don't know. People gave it some flack when it came out, I think, but I like the case. It's a good design. They sound really good. I don't think that they're super comfortable, but they're not uncomfortable. You know, they're just kind of there. They haven't fallen out. And I also agree that using the string to keep them in your ear, that's a clever idea.
Yeah.
So all in all, I'll keep using them. So.
It's interesting though, because I don't like I don't actually like in-ear earbuds or ear headphones or whatever. Like I don't like things going inside my ear. And so these are the design that I like, which is what I use for wired headphones, which are where they go in your ear hole, but not all the way in, you know what I mean? Like, you know, more like earbuds. And in that way they fit just as well as the wired ones I've been using. I've been using Urban Ears, those headsets, and they feel very, very similar. So.
There it is, made by Google.
Oh, there it is.
Says, oh, hi, Ron. And after you had said, "Oh, hi, Pixel Buds."
Yeah, the original tweet was, "Oh, hi, Pixel Buds." And then I didn't even tag Google in the original one. And they responded saying, "Oh, hi, Ron." And so then I had to say, "Oh, hi, Google." And I almost told them they were my favorite customer, but I felt as if they should have told me that I was their favorite customer, or at least said, "Hi, doggy."
So, or at least, you know, arranged for us a return visit from the front of the show. Just, I don't know if that's too much to expect a Twitter account to do, but
exactly. And I will give credit to anybody in the audience who likes The Room as well and gets all those references. So, all right.
There we are. Awesome. Well, we'll hear more about the Pixel Buds next week. I'm also going to talk about my time with the Google Home Max. I've been enjoying that loud sucker for a few weeks now. We'll talk all about that next week and dive into that. Before we pick apart some more announcements from the Consumer Electronics Show, we want to thank the sponsor of today's episode, and that is Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. If you've gone through the process of getting a mortgage, you know that the whole process is kind of dated. It didn't really keep up with the times. It's not very digitally, I don't know, mature, let's say. It's not right up there with how you use, you know, technology and how everything's super connected and super easy, but the push of a button, it's dated. It needed a client-focused technological revolution, and that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence that you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. It allows you to fully understand all of the details and be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. It's also powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds to give you what you're looking for. It's based on your income, your assets, your credit. Rocket Mortgage can analyze all the home loan options for which you qualify and then find the one that's just right for your situation. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, all you have to do is go to rocketmortgage.com/android. That's rocketmortgage.com/android. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of All About Android. All right, more hardware from the Consumer Electronics Show, branching out from the googly stuff and into other OEMs, other manufacturers, starting with Planet Computers, who I had never heard of. So I don't know if they're new to the scene, but they unveiled something called the Gemini. And so this is a UK startup, Planet Computers. The Gemini is a foldable clamshell 18x9 1080p display on top, and the bottom is a nearly full-size physical keyboard. So it's almost like you have a foldable keyboard, you know, for mobile. You've seen a lot of those portable little keyboards that you can fold out, except it's part of the phone. It's literally a keyboard as the bottom half of your phone. 10-core MediaTek Helio X27 processor, 4 gigs of RAM, 42 20 milliamp hour battery. It can dual boot into Linux if you prefer. Apparently, this is being sold right now through Indiegogo for $399. So if typing on a keyboard and a keyboard that you have with you all the time is of the highest importance for you, this is your solution, apparently. What do you guys think? Is this, I mean, this is different. I don't know the last time I've seen a form factor like this. Are you missing a keyboard on your phone, Luke, so much that you would want a phone like this?
On my phone, no. I think the virtual keyboard is really good. However, on my tablet, you know, I have a Pixel C and I don't use it a whole lot. I mean, I don't think anyone really uses tablets all that much anymore, but I do really love the keyboard on my tablet just because, you know, it's in landscape mode, I guess, and it's bigger keyboard, harder to type on the virtual one. So
yeah.
I don't know. I'm not really interested in that phone, but it's different.
Somebody might be.
I think, well, first off, Planet Computers sounds wonderfully fake. Like, it just sounds like a, you know, like, it's so, I support it, period, for that. But we all know that I love a good, I love a good clamshell design. I love a good physical keyboard design. I love a good wacky device. And so I'm on board with this. This actually reminds me of, and we'll probably have it next week, but I saw on Twitter, I think Daniel Bader had it on Twitter, or I forget who I saw it. But I guess Moto released a physical keyboard Moto mod for the Moto mod phones.
Yeah.
Which is like a flip around keyboard that snaps onto the back of it. And so, you know, maybe physical keyboards are making a comeback.
I'm putting it in right now because I think it was, is it Scooter X in the chat room dropped that in there and I completely missed this. So, Victor.
I think I literally saw it as we were starting the show. So I think it just came out this afternoon.
Oh man, this was totally breaking news. Anyways, yeah. Motorola, yes, the Moto mod with backlit keys for 99 buckaroonies.
That's fantastic.
And yeah, apparently this is an old thing that's a new thing again.
There's nothing better than the, should we do this right then?
Yeah, we should do this right. Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Go for it. Breaking news. Thank you, Victor. Thanks for keeping us on track. I feel better.
Well done. I
feel like it was a missed opportunity if we didn't play that. Yeah. Okay. So everybody's
There's a lot to be said for pressing a physical button, I think. That's what we've learned. We just can't get away from it for some reason.
Yeah, but I mean, even on like the old Motorola Droid, like it had a keyboard, but it wasn't very fun to type on that keyboard. I think at the time we convinced ourselves that it was, but I've gone back to that thing and I mean, when the keys don't have very much travel and they're tiny little cramped things, I'd just rather not have it, I think.
Yeah. I've gotten so used to the virtual keyboard.
Yeah.
It's fast. You've got the swipe typing now. I mean, I guess I just know where everything's at on that now. It works for me on the phone. So.
Absolutely. Completely agree. But hey, I'm also, you know, I think when it comes to productivity, people have different requirements, and I understand why people would want the bigger form factor. That happens to be why I actually like the Chromebooks. And now that Chromebooks, you know, do run Android apps, it's kind of the best of all worlds from that perspective. This is interesting though, Ron. This is totally down this trail. Similar type of device.
Yeah, exactly. So all eyes at CES, not all eyes, but some eyes at CES were on Razer, who, after acquiring friends of the show Nextbit, that acquisition was a while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
At this point, we were curious what Razer would be doing now that they're getting into the mobile, you know, kind of mobile phone kind of area. So first, the Razer phone. We'll start with Project Linda first, which is kind of crazy, which is a laptop dock that is powered by the Razer phone. So basically you dock the phone, and then we dock the phone into the laptop bezel, and the phone acts as a trackpad and powers the laptop.
Wow.
And it also charges the phone with this power bank while it's connected and plugged in. And then it's basically Android with a custom theme for a desktop configuration. So this is bananas. And if this is the kind of stuff Razer was going to bring to the table, then I'm all for it. Like, this is fantastic. Right? Because if you think about it, the Nextbit Robin and now what is the Razer phone, it's a little square brick. So it kind of could snap into a bezel on a laptop really nicely. Video viewers, you can see the video of it falling into place in the laptop.
Oh,
I mean, am I alone in thinking that this is awesome?
That's pretty neat, I gotta say. And we've seen this tackled in very kind of janky sorts of ways of these device docks into another device. You know, was it the pad phone or the phone pad? I think both existed. the Atrix, the Motorola Atrix was another one that did the keyboard dock for the phone. But that makes a lot of sense to make the phone the trackpad and have an extra control display.
Further, as JJ mentioned in the chat room, also the speakers of the phone are the speakers for the laptop, and which is even better too, because they've got two physical speakers, and the Razer phone is actually going to be is going to start supporting high dynamic range and 5.1 surround sound content on Netflix, making it the first phone to support both of those specs. And the Dolby effect obviously will be virtual since there are only two speakers on it, but still. It's really compelling. And if you think about like what Apple did with the MacBook Pro and the Touch Bar, you know, as we saw in that video demo that we were just watching, and you can go online and check it out, not only does the phone act as the trackpad, but it's using it as a secondary display and interacting with it. It's just really, really, really interesting. I like it. If they had announced this when they announced the Razer phone, I probably would have been an instant buy. And now I'm kind of considering it again.
Yeah, well, now keep in mind, this is a concept. This isn't a product that is shipping necessarily yet. Yeah. But I like the way they're thinking. I really actually want to see the Razer phone. I would love to get a Razer phone in person and play around with it. It's cool to see Razer being so all in on their mobile phone efforts directed at gaming, which makes sense. They're a gaming company, but they're not just saying, here's a phone that looks cool and, you know, it's our gaming phone. Like, they're actually being very thoughtful about how they're making changes and upgrades from a platform perspective and not just a device perspective to make gaming better in a number of ways. And got to give them props for that.
I gotta say, Project Linda might be my new favorite thing. Might be my new favorite project.
It's your new yes. Why is the name dropping out of my brain? The modular project Aura. The new Aura for you?
Aura. Yeah, it's the new project Aura for me, for sure.
All right. Is it the new project Aura for you, Luke?
I think it's pretty fantastic. I'm not a gamer.
Yeah.
I don't have enough time for that right now, but I think that is really cool, and this is a new player to the Android space, and they're stepping up, and they're actually innovating. They're doing cool things with their phone, and I think that's great. I think that's exactly what we need.
Yeah.
So.
Agreed.
Yeah, I love it.
Nice. Let's see here. We have also heard off and on about this idea of putting a fingerprint sensor underneath the display. Let me make sure I don't have any notifications. Okay, so... Let's see here. When I unlock my Pixel phone, I always see that little fingerprint down there, and I want that to be my fingerprint sensor. You know, that little thing there. And it just seems like it would make so much sense for that little fingerprint under there to actually be the sensor. Well, it turns out Vivo, a company from China, integrates a newly announced Synaptics optical sensor underneath the glass of the display. They call it Clear ID. This technology only works with OLED panels because how OLED works, it lights up certain pixels and it doesn't light up other ones. So basically, this is looking through the unlit pixels in the display. And apparently, at least according to Vladislav of The Verge, who is demonstrating it in this video, says it works about like you would expect. It's maybe a little bit slower in response, but you can see where the fingerprint sensor is with the graphic on screen, and you put your fingerprint over there and it scans it and it lets you in. So there's no need, like the full front of the display is, you know, relatively edge to edge, at least on the side. I mean, it's not perfectly bezel-less, but, you know, minimal bezels compared to the last couple of years. And there's no fingerprint sensor on the back anymore, so that allows the device to maybe be slimmer or whatever. It allows for different design considerations as a result. So I don't know if this is the next thing, if we're going to see more phones doing this. I would imagine we probably will. I think this is the first of a few that we're going to see throughout this, you know, upcoming year or two. Is this something that you guys want? I think it's pretty cool. What do you guys think?
I think it's pretty cool as long as it's reliable, as long as it's reliable as the one on the back. You know, I'll sacrifice a little bit of time for that, but it just needs to work. So
yeah,
right. I'd be interested to try it. Yeah. Definitely.
Cool. Well, I don't know. I think the phone is still unannounced. The technology has been on display at CES, so I imagine this is ahead of some sort of official announcement. We'll hear something about that sometime soon.
The the balance between the tees of something you'll see down the road versus something you can get now or
yes.
soon. You know, so, but talk about teasing of things that you could get. And speaking of fingerprint sensors, and for our fans of Sony out there that listen, and we know you're out there, Sony finally has a phone with a fingerprint sensor shipping, and it's shipping to the U.S., which is great. So the Sony Xperia XA2 and XA2 Ultra were announced at CES, and the XA2 is a 5.2-inch device with a 1080p display, running Snapdragon 630, 3 gig of RAM, 32 gig of storage, got a micro SD card, 23 megapixel rear facing camera, and a wide angle 8 megapixel front facing camera with a 3300 milliamp battery. And the XA2 Ultra is bigger at 6 inches, 1080p display, 4 gig of RAM, 64 gig of storage, dual front facing cameras, and a whopping 3580 milliamp battery. They're looking for it's coming out in February, which is just around the corner, with Android 8.0 Oreo, but no idea how much it will cost you. So but as we found out, these Sony phones tend to be available at Best Buy, so if you like Sony phones, this might be the new ones for you, because they'll have a fingerprint sensor. So, yeah. And it's important to know that the fingerprint sensor is on the back. So there it is.
There it is. Not on the side or whatever, because I think that's where Sony has put it in the past. So it's a rear-facing fingerprint sensor. I'm not sure what they did, like if there was some sort of a patent issue in the States that prevented them from doing this for many years, you know, the last 2 or 3 years. Not sure what happened that allowed them to do it now. Or maybe they decided, hey, you know, that's a really good idea. We should do that in the U.S. And that's all that it was. I doubt it was that. But, hey, Sony fans, you got some good news for you. I'm not sure how many Sony phones I've seen out in the wild. Luke, you said you're where you're at. I mean, are you seeing very many things outside of, like, iPhones and I don't know. Do you see many Android devices out in the wild? And if you do, do you see any Sonys?
I see pretty much iPhones and Samsung phones. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
What I have to say about that Sony phone is, wow, look at that bezel.
boy, Sony likes its bezels. Boy. Yeah. The top and bottom bezels. Yep.
If you're into Sony stuff, that's the one. So.
Oh, poor Sony and poor Sony fans, because they really do care. They really do love the company, you know, the products of the company. But Sony just gets a bad rap. Just it hasn't had a good go of, you know, of its phones in the U.S. Maybe this will change. Maybe this will change things. I'm sure there's more from CES. And if there is, we'll probably check in on it next week, because CES is not over. But that's what we got for right now. We do have an email before we move on to the arena portion of the show from David, who said, I also chose the Lenovo Tab 4-8 as my daughter's first tablet for Christmas. That's the tablet that I bought for my youngest daughter, my 4-year-old daughter. He says, this tablet is perfect for my kid. I think we'll find it to be a good fit for your kid. Talking to me. She is 9 years old and figured she was overdue for her own Google account. I'm utilizing Google's Family Link app to draw her into the Google Android ecosystem while keeping tabs on activities. However, I have two issues with the Family Link app. One, I have to use Family Link on her tablet to add her account to our Google Home. But as soon as I give her permission, the prompts for her to say, okay, G, to train the device never come up, and I just get a spinning circle. I have encountered the same exact issue. I cannot get my kids' voices activated on our Google Home. So I know what you're talking about, and I don't know if I haven't been able to figure it out. And I would love to, because now, as we talked about earlier, they have Google Homes in their room. So I would love for it to be trained to their voice. Two, David says, I'm unable to redeem a Google Play gift card to her account. I get a cryptic error message. That I know nothing about. I don't know what to tell you there. Maybe they'll get that figured out. But that would be nice. It would be nice to be able to give your kids' account a gift card so that they have some, you know, money essentially to spend in the Play Store, if you can get it to work like that. I'm not sure if Family Link is set up like that, though, because I think you're in Family Link, you set up a family unit, let's say, and any of their purchases suddenly route to you as the parent on your device for permission. So I don't know. That might be why that's not working. And he says he's reached out to support. He hasn't heard about that. You know, hasn't heard back on it. But anyways, asks for our opinion of this app. I'm guessing, Ron, you have no opinion of Family Link.
I have none, unfortunately.
All right. And Luke,
someday,
I know
someday I will.
Your daughter's pretty young. She probably doesn't have a tablet or a phone yet, right?
She does. She has a Kindle Fire.
Oh, okay. Did you get the kids? Right. So the kids edition Kindle Fire?
Yeah. No, just the regular one. It was like $20 on Black Friday.
Hey, that does the trick. And yes. And what do you think of that?
The Kindle?
Yeah.
It's good enough. I mean, she doesn't know what it is. She doesn't use it yet, but she taps on the screen and
yeah,
she likes to tap on her phone. So yeah, I don't know.
That'll be perfect. Yeah. I had gotten two Kindle Fire HD 8s, the kids editions for my 4 and my 7 year old for Christmas. I ultimately ended up sending them back. I couldn't do it. I think they're like, and maybe they would have been fine with it. But I just had a really hard time relinquishing control and not being able to do things like install the Play Store on the kids' profile. And because there are a lot of apps and games that are not there that I know that they would miss from the tablet that they use now. So
it's funny. We actually got my grandma, we got her a Kindle Fire, and she had to install, or I had to install the Play Store on there for her so she could get Google Photos and all the apps that they were missing. So
Yep. Yeah, it's hard to go without it when you know that it exists and you want it.
Yep, exactly.
But as far as my opinion of the app, I think it's fine. It has some shortcomings. I wish that I could when my kids are using their tablets, I can load up the phone on my the app on my phone to kind of lock their device if I want, or put it to sleep or whatever, say it's time to take a break. What I really want is a simple readout on their names that says how many minutes or how many hours they've been on today. Just that. Just give me the basic, like, 1 hour and 3 minutes. That way I know at a glance, like, hey, you know what? It's time to take a break. Even though you can program all this stuff, I just want that single metric. And that's not very easily discernible in the app, which is really weird to me.
You think that would be obvious? That would be like the kind of, what is the one thing you want to know, right?
Yes, it's really weird. I don't understand why. I mean, you can go into the apps portion for each device and add up today's total used time on all the apps. So you could do that. But like, I just want to like open up the app and go, oh man, how long have my kids been on? Oh, 2 hours. That's too long. And you can't do that easily. I have to go in there and do math, and I don't want to do math. So there we go. That's my thoughts on the app. But anyways, David, thank you for writing. Anyone can write into us, and we love it when you do. AAA@twit.tv. Let's thank the sponsor of today's episode, then we'll jump into the arena and review some apps. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Does your business have any New Year's resolutions? Have you set a resolution for your business? Maybe, maybe you want to hire the right people. That's probably a really good resolution. Every business should consider making hiring just easier, more efficient, and just finding the right people. That's about as good as it could possibly be for your business, because it's going to make your business do better if you get the right people in those positions. This year, let ZipRecruiter help. No one has done a better job of transforming how you find the right talent than they have. ZipRecruiter posts your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. Then they actively look for the most qualified candidates and invite them to apply. They even review every application to identify the top candidates, so you never miss a great match. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Android. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Android. One more time, ZipRecruiter.com/Android. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of All About Android. And now it's time for the second of 2018 Android Arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
All right. So let's see here. We'll check in on last week's arena. And I got to say, Ron, I'm not surprised that Remindy won. 63% of the votes went to Remindy. Second place is Inkit, which was mine, 20%. And then third place was Flo's Comic Screen, 17%. I've used Remindy multiple times this past week. It's actually come in super handy for me.
It was really interesting because I'm not surprised it won either. I'm surprised it won by the margin it won by. And what was even cooler was that the developer of Remindy, because I know there was a lot of – I was reading in the chat room last week. There was some concern because it's a independent developer, just a guy as far as I could tell. I forget his name. And there was some concern about whether it was a legit app or something like that because, you know, kind of just getting started. But I saw him on Twitter tweeting it out and talking about it and really excited that we kind of – that we talked about it. So that was really cool to see a young indie developer, you know, kind of getting noticed. And hopefully a lot of people like the app. So I was excited to see it win. So,
yeah.
So with that win, it gives our first week standings of the arena. I'm currently sitting in first place with 5 points. Jason, you are in second with 3 points. Flo is in third with 2 points. And the guests, because there was no guest, are in last with 0 points. So, Luke, this is your chance to really represent the guests for us and get some points on the board.
So. But as we usually do in the arena, the first loser goes first. So, Luke, you get to rest. You get to kind of like take it in and, you know, overthink it. I'm going to tear into my app real quick and then we'll have you show off yours and then with Ron's. So in a previous life, I thought that I was going to become a film director. I really wanted to. I was way into film. I thought it was awesome. It was my life. And this app I would have so cared about like 15 or 20 years ago. But thankfully, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, digital in the movie theaters wasn't really a thing especially as much as it is now. When you go to a movie theater, pretty much everything that you see in theaters nowadays, it's all digital. But there are a lot of film enthusiasts who are very, you know, heartfelt about the loss or the kind of rapid decline of movie theaters that actually show movies on film, 70, you know, all different types and formats of film. That used to be just how you saw film in movie theaters, and it has a certain aesthetic quality to it. And now you get a different thing. It's not better or worse. It's just different. Digital has its own advantages. Kodak has an app. I can't believe I'm bringing a Kodak app to the arena called Kodak Real Film. And if you're a film buff, you can put into this app your location, so it tracks your location, and it will let you know, it will alert you when a new movie comes into theaters that's within a certain distance close to you that's actually playing on film somewhere versus playing in digital somewhere. So if this really... if this is really important to you, and I have some friends who like this is the most important thing is to watch these movies in film instead of digital, then this would be an app for you. You can tap on playing on film and it's going to use my location to tell me what movies are playing near me in actual film. And what's depressing about it is that one comes up for now playing, because even in the Bay Area, of all places where you imagine there's all sorts of film of movie theaters everywhere, so I would have thought that I'd get more. It's pretty much the Castro Theater in San Francisco that plays stuff on film. And maybe there's other theaters that aren't being tracked here. But coming up, Murder on the Orient Express, now playing at the Castro Theater, I believe, if I remember correctly from looking at this earlier. And you get this nice kind of view. It's actually developed really nicely. No screenings today. What about Monday? Let's see here. Yes, Castro Theater. There's all the screening times, and it's 37.7 miles away from where I am.
I can say it has nothing to do with the app, but as someone who lived within walking distance of the Castro Theater and frequented it often when living in San Francisco, it is worth driving 37 miles to go to a movie at the Castro Theater because it's amazing.
No doubt. So, without question. Yeah. That theater, man, for film lovers.
It's beautiful.
Like they
Beautiful.
Have the directors come in there all the time to show their films and then do a Q&A, and it's like another celebrity interviewing the director. It's like unbelievable. But anyways, so I realize this is one of those apps that really appeals to a very small small population. There probably aren't a huge amount of people who really care that much about watching movies on film. But I know that those who do, it's really important to them. And I just thought this was a really great way to do it. It really just kind of makes it seamless. And then it'll notify you as new films are announced that are nearby. And in general, it just also gives you expanded information on films that are in the movie theaters. And you can read all about it and find, you know, where it's playing around you and all that kind of stuff. So it's called Kodak Reel Film. Reel as in a reel of film. R-E-E-L. And yeah. Check it out. I thought it was good for the film buff. All right. So, Luke, I have the app that you chose installed. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about it, and I'll try to keep up by showing it off.
Okay. So the app I picked, like I said, you know, you guys have already gone through all my apps, but and I'm not a huge app person. I use the ones I make and not a whole lot of others, but this is one I actually really love. It's by a Googler. It's called Plaid. And it's basically, I mean, it's super simple. You just go into the app and it shows you all of these cool pieces of artwork that other users have put up online. And you can use it for design inspiration or just looking, you know. And it's a really nicely designed app, and it's just fun to browse. So I spend time throughout the day just browsing this, just to get away from my computer and look at something else to inspire me or any of that stuff. So I think this is a fantastic app, and it's just a fun little app to use. You know, it's just fun, and there's a lot of really cool content out there. So anyone looking just for something a little different, just to browse and see nice content, check out Plaid. And another note, it's completely open source. So Nick Butcher is the one that he puts it out, and he's a pretty, I mean, it's a fantastic app. So, and yeah, I'm totally a fan of it being open source. I like that a lot. So that's Plaid. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward, but does exactly what I want it to do. It just distracts me for a little bit. It's much better than scrolling through Facebook or something like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's like an inspiration role, I imagine, for developers to kind of get ideas. And Nick Butcher, I've chatted with him at I.O. a number of times.
Yeah.
I've long wanted to make him a friend of the show. Maybe one of these days he'll finally come on. I'll have to reach out to him again. But yes, it looks like a good kind of way to kind of get inspired in terms of design. It's really well developed, really well designed itself.
Really, really simple, but it does exactly what it's supposed to. So
right on.
That's Plaid.
Cool. And weird and cool little things like this. Like we were talking earlier about material design and how it's easy for it to, if you follow too close and too kind of specifically to just the terms of material design, things can look a little boring, but little touches that set it apart where you like touch the views and you get the little moving eyeball. Not that like that functionally that did nothing, but little things like that bring an app to life in a new way and give it, you know, it's like a chance for it to breathe in a new way, even though it's following these guidelines. It doesn't look like everything else because little things like that happening.
That's exactly right. You know, it's a great showcase for what material design could be.
Yeah.
When you think outside the box a little bit. So, I love Plaid. I think it's fantastic.
Right on. Plaid is free in the Play Store. So you can check it out for yourself, and you should. All right. And Ron, I have your app installed, so go ahead and talk about it. I'll show it off.
Yes, I enjoy the irony of when I bring an app to the arena that is a category that I have made fun of in the past or shown disdain for. But that means that the developer, you know, won me over with a clever integration.
Yep.
And in this particular case, the app is called Smart Wallpaper, and it is a wallpaper app. So, you know, that let's put that there out there. It's a wallpaper app. I'm actually suggesting a wallpaper app. I can't believe it myself. But what's interesting about this is it allows you to change the wallpaper based off settings of your choice. So, for example, you can change your wallpaper based on the weather or based on what day it is, based on the Wi-Fi network you're connected to. So hypothetically, you could set a wallpaper for when you're home versus when you're at work. Or any other sort of condition like that, which I think is really, really interesting because it's like a contextual wallpaper, which is really clever. So yeah, and you know, in playing with it, as Jason's there showing how to use it and how to make all those kind of changes, it comes with some wallpapers kind of suggested, but then you can also add your own, and it just makes it, you know, like the idea of a contextual wallpaper really I found was very compelling. So yeah, so there you go, smart wallpaper, free in the Google Play Store.
The Unsplash collection is kind of the link to a bunch of different wallpaper designs that you can edit into. I like the idea of having a different one for Wi-Fi network at work versus home. It's like you got
that's really clever. Yeah,
business in front, party in back. Yeah.
Yeah, or if you live in a metro area where you're connecting to the like I often connect to they have Wi-Fi in the subways here in New York, you know, but I always want to know if I'm on that Wi-Fi or not, right? Like you want to, you know, and sometimes you're looking to see what Wi-Fi can, you know, server you're connected to or whatever. But if the wallpaper changed, that's a really clear, you know, identifier that I'm on this network, right? Which I think is really cool. So there you go, smart wallpapers.
Did you check the chat room?
Oh, did I? Has this come up before?
I think so.
Oh, no.
I didn't recognize it either, but apparently it has.
I thought I had checked. Gosh, darn it.
Oh, no.
That's not a
it's
good
a really great app. I'm curious. Did it? Yes. And you know what? That's never happened to you.
Did it win? I know. I'm normally really good about it.
That's never happened to Ron.
It was. Who chose it?
I'm wondering, did I? I don't remember.
Let's find out.
I'm very curious to know.
It was a Flow app. She had done it in the past. And I was on the show. Normally when we pick a repeat app, it's because we missed the show. And so we didn't know. This I just have no excuse for. My bad. Yeah. let's just say, listen, folks, this is not my night.
Connectivity. That was advanced revenge. Yeah, that was the connectivity issues were advanced revenge for picking Flow's app.
Do we have time to do a last minute app switch, or is it set in stone? Do I just have to take the zero?
I think you have to take it.
It. That's fine.
That's what we've done in the past.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll take it.
you never know. You might still win. Ultimately, it's up to the voters. It's up to the people to decide.
No. I'll take the DQ. It happens before. If I hold that to other people, I got to do it.
So. Yeah, we should probably do that. So you can place your vote for your favorite app. It is a very nice app, by the way. twit.to/AAAPoll351 is your favorite app. Kodak Real Film, Plaid, or Smart Wallpapers again. You can place your vote. And we'll check in on it next week and see which one is the big winner. Victor is circling like a hawk. Victor is a film lover, a film buff, though pre-arena votes have Plaid ahead, 75% to 25% to Kodak Real Film. But that always changes, and it likely will. We'll see where that settles. We've gone a little bit over, and I apologize, Luke, but really want to thank you for taking time tonight to join us. This was a lot of fun. We'd love to have you back.
Hey, I had a fantastic time. Let me know when you want me and I'll hop on. Yep.
Right on, man. So this is the kind of your last opportunity to let people know what you want them to know as far as where they can find the work you're doing, all that kind of stuff.
Well, hey, I got a lot of cool stuff out on Google Play. I'd love for you to try. Talon for Twitter, Pulse SMS, you know. My website is clinkeraps.com, and you can reach out to me by email or Twitter or really anywhere at Luke Clinker is my Twitter handle. If you want to get in touch and talk or whatever. So I'm pretty easy to get a hold of.
Awesome. Well, Luke, thank you. This was a pleasure. And we'll be in touch. We'll definitely rope you back and maybe see you roaming the field at Google I/O whenever it's announced.
Hey, I hope so.
Maybe you'll be there this time. we'll put the vibes out right now so that the friends of the show will hear them and go, hey, yeah, he really needs to be at Google I/O.
Yeah, right.
We'll see. I don't know how far that actually gets you, so don't get your hopes up. Ron, what about you when you're not having internet issues? What are you up to?
Yeah, listen, normally when I'm operating at full capacity, you can follow me at twitter.com/RonXO or at Instagram at RonXO as well there. And I personally want to thank Luke for Talon because it is, like I said in the pre-show, it is my go-to Twitter app. And it's what I've been using for years now, and I would never consider anybody else. So my relationship with Talon is like, it's a very strong relationship, so thank you for that. But that's all you need for me. Just follow me on Twitter, where I use Talon. So, in fact, I posted that picture of my earbuds with Talon. So there you go.
Nice. Property of Talon. Yeah. Thank you, Ron. Thanks for jumping through fiery hoops to get your internet working.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. Hey, it worked out. It sounds great. Audio listeners probably were only slightly clued in. Video viewers, maybe a little bit more clued in, but it's all good. It's all good. Big thanks to Victor for TD in the show and for helping us edit every day. Really appreciate your help, Victor.
No problem.
And you can find me at about.me. Well, no. Why do I keep going there? It's like permanently etched into my brain. JasonHowell.net. yellowgoldmusic.com. It's like totally there. It's my Ron Burgundy moment week after week. But that's it for this week. You can leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. Send us an email, AAA@twit.tv. You can find the show on Twitter. We have a Twitter account, @AndroidShow. Arena apps, all of the apps can be found there, including the three apps that we did tonight. If you go to twit.to/AndroidApps, show notes and past episodes can be found at twit.tv/AAA. You can watch us live. If you want to come in studio and catch the show live while we record it, that image always cracks me up. You can just make sure and email us first. tickets@twit.tv. We'll leave a chair in the studio for you, or however many chairs for all of you people. If you want to make it a party, that's cool. tickets@twit.tv. But you're probably going to catch us live, if you're going to catch us live at all, on the site. That's twit.tv/live every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific. And finally, catch everything that you need to know. Like I said, twit.tv/AA. That's where you can subscribe, and we hope that you do. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody. But I do have something that I meant to show off leading up to Christmas. I don't know if this is necessarily a Christmas flavor or if it's just
it's a winter.
It's a winter flavor. So I think I think it's still applicable. What you will notice, though, is that it's the same great taste, but with red cream. So I don't really actually think these taste any different, I'm guessing, from the standard Oreos.
I'm fascinated by the idea of like a seasonal. Like, does this mean we can expect spring Oreos? Those look very red.
This?
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm really curious about the red food coloring in here. I don't know if it's legit or not, but I swear when my kids eat candy with red food coloring, it makes them more than just like sugar hyper. It sends them off into it's like it was spiked with something. Anyways,
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that Oreo's getting out of control.
Yeah, you think?
I think so. The fact that I don't even know what this flavor is. It's just winter. What does winter taste like?
It's just the flavor of staining your clothes if it rubs on it. So be careful.
All right,
that's the flavor. All right, I'll taste it.
Let's do it, Jason. Mm-hmm. It's the same great taste but with red cream.
It's as if they came up with some crazy invention where they could change the color of food.
Is it the same?
Yeah, it's about the same. It's exactly the same.
So, wait a minute. Hmm? Wait a minute. So, we're on record. Gina says that the original Oreos is a 10, is a perfect 10.
Okay.
And if that is the same as regular Oreos but red, is that also a 10?
I guess technically it would be. It feels weird eating an Oreo with a red cream filling. That's a really good point, Burke. This Oreo really should be branded as a Halloween flavor, not as a winter flavor.
Yeah.
Huh? But maybe they didn't want to go the whole like blood in the Oreo cookie route.
That's a curious decision.
Might be too far.
Yeah, it's a direction to take, but I don't know about that. Yeah.
Might be a bit too far. Whatever, it's fine. Hey, if you like a regular Oreo, you're going to like the winter Oreo. And there you go. There is no claw to take it away, so I'll just slide it over there, and we'll consider it done. I will say that I'm down to bare bones. I have one more package left in the office. But last night I went on a Oreo shopping spree on Amazon. I've got 3 months worth of Oreos shipping to me, and it's all the flavors that like are hard to find. So we're going to have some really fun ones coming up here really soon. I must ask you, Luke, because there are a million different flavors of Oreos. Have you tried any of the extra ones, or is it just like the traditional? Like before this, I had never tried the extra ones, just the traditional ones.
You know, I've tried the double stuffed ones, and that's about as far as I've gone. So
that's about as experimental as I think most people do.
I remember as a child when the double stuff was like the height of bacchanalia that you could have as like a 10-year-old. You're like, this is living. We've got double stuff.
Can you believe that they took the really great part about an Oreo and they gave you more of it? This is unprecedented. Yes. And now we take it for granted.
Yeah.
We take it for granted.